Lyle Presler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. Jim Shear, most tenured VJ in the history of music television. Two men on one mission to talk about music. And it all starts now.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Presler.
And on today's show, we will talk about the current happenings in music. This week, specifically.
Many happenings.
We're going to talk about the Grammy Awards happening on Monday, not Sunday.
Monday, that's because the best gift you can give your loved one is not to have it on Valentine's Day.
Do you think they did it because of Valentine's?
Yes, they did.
Oh,
wow. I'm told they did. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We also have our picks of the week. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to hear yours. These are current songs, right? These
Absolutely.
Were the roles we laid out for each other.
Absolutely.
Current songs, and then at the end of the show, we have Ask Lyle, where I will ask you, Lyle Presler, five quick-fire questions.
Sounds good.
But let's talk about the Super Bowl. Your thoughts.
The Super Bowl.
So music is part of the Super Bowl.
Music is a big part of the Super Bowl.
Lady Gaga, mm-hmm. She sang the national anthem, Oops. And then Coldplay performed the halftime show, but we'll talk about that more because it wasn't just Coldplay.
Right, exactly.
So what did you think of Lady Gaga's national anthem?
I have this idea about pop music that you have to be able to sing. You just have to be able to sing, and she can sing. She can sing. It's fascinating to me that she looks different every time I see her. It's makeup, it's the way her hair's done, but it's just always a different look. She did drag it out a bit.
She did.
She dragged it out, but also the airplanes have to be queued, you see, to fly over. You know that, right?
Yeah.
So they have to have a queue. So if she messes that up, then the planes fly over right in the middle of it. So maybe they were far away, and they had to fly out over the ocean and come back.
Now, did she sing it live?
Yes, I think she did.
See, I thought she did, but Uh-oh. There was a part near the end where it looked like she missed it by Ooh. Like a little millisecond. Because you know that Whitney Houston, hers was, it was lip-synced?
Lip-sunk.
Lip-sunk?
Lip-sunk. yeah, it's always a tricky thing. I thought she did it live, and I can't understand why she wouldn't have. Although, to be fair to these artists, sometimes there are acoustical issues that
come
into play.
Oh, it's a mess.
Yeah. And sometimes if you don't get it right, you usually have to have a backup plan. So I think, I've heard actually that sometimes it can be canned in case it doesn't work in rehearsal live.
Okay.
So, who knows?
Now, obviously, she sung the song.
At some
and
point.
She was and she was singing at the Super Bowl.
Right.
But I swear...
You saw a little...
30 seconds, 20 seconds before the song ended, I thought, oh, maybe she is lip-syncing.
I have to tell you, that's a tricky thing, but I remember years ago, Saturday Night Live, Aerosmith was playing. And I wasn't paying that much attention to it, and my wife was. And she's not a guitar player. But all of a sudden she screams, Joe Perry's not playing that part! And sure enough, I turned around and he wasn't.
Yeah, because Jennifer Hudson sang the national anthem a handful of years ago, mm-hmm. and she came into VH1 when I was working at that time. I said, did you sing it? She said, no.
Oh,
and I
really?
Said, wow. I'm like, I thought you did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So we'll have to have Gaga come on.
We'll have to have her
to
on.
Let us know if she actually sung it. Halftime show.
But she can sing. We do
oh,
know
she
that.
Can. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, we know that.
So, halftime show, Coldplay is the billed performer. To me, it didn't feel like a Coldplay show.
No, no. Well,
They felt like an opening act to me.
Well, yeah. And first of all, I think it would be a lot more fun if the same announcers who do the game actually do the halftime performance. So Jim Nance, Phil Simms, hello friends, looks like Coldplay's taking the stage. And then Phil can jump in with like, you know, I haven't seen that much India reference since Kula Shaker. You know, you can do it that way. You know, Beyonce's in formation. It looks like a classic X formation. You know, we can go through it. It was weird. The choice was weird. And I got to tell you, I'm really distressed with the amount of abuse that Coldplay's taken for this. And it really is all over the place. I mean, I heard a guy call them clowns for no particular, another guy called them tools. And I didn't really understand it. It's like, it's Coldplay. What do you want from this? It seemed like, the issue I have is that it's, and I'll get to your thing about who was the star, but it seems to me like this is an anodyne thing, okay? It's the halftime of the Super Bowl. We're not going to break any new ground in music. What we don't want is it all to break down. The artist can't perform. There's wardrobe malfunctions or whatever it is. That's what it's about. Now, as far as them headlining, I mean, what do you expect to happen when all of a sudden Bruno and the gang start marching towards them on one end, and then formation happens, and Beyonce's marching towards them? I mean, they're going to be covered up at some point. It's not going to be Coldplay's show. So it did seem like they were the warm-up act, definitely. But I got to say that I think they knew that. I don't see how they wouldn't have known that going in.
Because I think they're not given that slot unless they say, well, listen, we might want Beyonce, we might want someone else in there. And they said, oh. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because unless you're Paul McCartney or...
That's right. And even Paul McCartney. I mean, I think that the basic rule is they want to provide a certain amount of entertainment that stretches across a certain number of barriers.
Because this has been the trend. When Bruno Mars did it, they brought out the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Exactly.
Which to me made no sense.
Made no sense.
Katy Perry brought out Missy Elliott. Which kind of made no sense to me.
Yeah,
I mean, it's in the world of...
In a loose world
like
of...
Hip-hop, like hip-hop, pop music.
Yeah, I guess.
But I never knew that Katy Perry and Missy Elliott were tight. So
right.
I think they're trying to appeal to a bunch of people.
Well, they are. They are, and they have to. I mean, if you think about it, the Super Bowl is not only watched by an incredible cross-segment of the American population, but it's watched all over the world. So they've got to provide entertainment which appeals to as many people as they can possibly get to. Because when I saw the Super Bowl in 1979 in Pasadena when the Steelers beat the Rams,
yeah.
The halftime entertainment was the USC marching band. I believe it was USC. That was the halftime entertainment. And then we had these cards that we flipped over in unison.
Oh, so you were at?
I was at it. Yeah, 1979.
That was Super Bowl 14.
That was Pasadena, California, the Rose Bowl, and the Steelers beat the Rams.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we were invited to the Rams' victory party. That was not a victory party. I think there were might two players might have shown up to that. But yeah, so the halftime has evolved so much over the years, and yet, at the same time, it's really not a showcase for music as much as it's a showcase for culture, popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be really American culture, then it got expanded out to be British culture or whatever else, but it's pop culture, and that's what the whole thing's about.
Now, I like the montage near the end, and mm-hmm. I said, oh, they're sort of celebrating the 50 years of Super Bowl halftimes, although there haven't been legitimate 50 years of Super Bowl
right,
halftimes.
Exactly.
To me, that made sense, but I wish they would have billed it as, hey, join Coldplay, Beyonce, and Bruno Mars for a celebration of Super Bowl halftimes of the past.
Absolutely.
That would have made more sense to me, and I think there wouldn't have been much hate or as much hate for Coldplay if that were the case.
Right, and I also was sitting there while I was watching it. I was afraid that they wouldn't bring Coldplay back. So I was sitting there going, I was saying to my wife, like, they're not going to bring, this is horrible. They're going to just cover them up. And they literally, on screen, they covered them up. They sort of retreated back behind their amplifiers, and then these two boring parties came together. And I thought it was at least good that they managed to bring them back out.
Well, they brought them back, but I thought they should have gotten their own song.
Well, I thought
after Beyonce and Bruno left.
When he ran to the piano, I thought they were going to get their own song. And I thought, oh, this is great. They're going to bring them back. They're going to do their own song. And maybe the other two will. But then it just became some sort of up with people kind of thing at a certain point.
Yeah, and I think they felt like an opening act because you get 12 minutes for the whole halftime show.
Right.
And they're playing little snippets of Coldplay songs.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno comes out, does his Uptown Funk.
Right.
Beyonce comes out, does a whole song of Formation. Meanwhile, Coldplay has these little 20-second song snippets. So they didn't even get a whole song out of the deal.
They didn't get a whole song.
So as a punk rock legend, what was your thought about the instrumentation? Because that's all pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Like, it sounded like club music to me. And I don't like my rock bands to sound like, you know, like a crisp, clean pop song.
Absolutely not. And that's a big problem. But again, that goes to the issues of acoustics. I mean, it's just almost impossible to develop any ambient noise. You want to get some crowd noise mixed into that so that it gives you the impression that they're actually playing in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
But once you can't actually create any real ambience, because how are you going to do that in a giant football stadium? I think that's one of the toughest things. I don't blame anybody for just having it canned at a certain point.
I think you have to.
You have to.
But when Bruno did it, it was believable.
Right.
And when the Red Hot Chili Peppers came out, it was believable. And then it came out on that Monday. They said, oh, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, all their music was pre-recorded.
Right.
And I thought, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you know.
So you got to make us believe. It's like professional wrestling. You got to make us believe it.
Well, and there are obviously a lot of tricks you can do with the pre-recordings. I mean, the safest thing to do, if you can pull it off, is actually to record it live.
Mm-hmm.
And then
give it some grit.
Right. And then try to mimic exactly what you did. And that's hard. But if you're good enough, if you play together enough and you think about it enough and you can mimic exactly what you do, you can kind of pull it off. But that's tough too. So there's been accusations that for many years that a lot of groups have basically recorded like in a live environment with no one there and then just mimicked it.
How come Taylor Swift didn't play? And then how come they didn't get a Bay Area band to play like Metallica or Green Day?
Well,
are they not current enough?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I could see not having Metallica or Green Day, but why no Taylor Swift?
My understanding about the Taylor Swift thing was that there's a problem between the sponsorships. That apparently, now this may not be true.
Oh, because she's Coke, right?
She's Coke.
Oh.
And this is a whole Pepsi thing. That may be true, or maybe she just didn't want to do it. You never know. You never know. I mean, sometimes people just don't want to do this stuff, believe it or not.
Because it seemed like
that would seem the obvious choice. The choice.
She's fresh off her tour.
Absolutely. I mean, she couldn't be bigger. So that would make the most sense. But, you know, it could have been a sponsorship issue. It could have just been, I'm tired.
All right, so there is our recap of Super Bowl 50. And before we talk about the music happenings of the week, we've lost some very important artists in the last few months. And I just wanted to talk about that before we go to break.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's been David Bowie, Lemmy, Scott Weiland, Glenn Frey, Natalie Cole, Maurice White from Earth, Wind & Fire.
Big one. That's a big one. To me, I mean, Earth, Wind & Fire was like part of my childhood. I mean, you couldn't get away from them, you know, even if you tried. And you go back now and you listen to those songs and they were really good. I mean, they were really good songs. And they were effortless. I mean, I went back last night and listened to September and Shining Star. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and I even watched the live versions of them. And it was just so in the pocket and it was so smooth. And you forget that you know, when people are really talented and can really play, it's just amazing. It's like watching people ski. You know, it looks so easy because they're so good at it.
I was listening to Let's Groove.
Okay.
And parts of it sound like a Pharrell song.
Yeah.
But then there's 500 other things going on. And you're like, who in music is doing that today?
Right. It's interesting you say that because I was surprised going back and listening to some of those songs that there were little parts in there that seemed to come from almost nowhere. Like, it almost sounded proggy at times. It was like, where did that progression, where did that arpeggio come in? You know, it was interesting. I mean, I always like going back and listening to stuff, you know, closely. Because then you're not just remembering the lines, you're not just remembering the chorus, you're actually getting into what the music is.
And then David Bowie.
Well, you were a big fan. Huge fan.
You talk about the greats of all time.
Oh my goodness.
Like he's on the short list.
The best thing I read was a little op-ed piece that was written by a guy, an Indian guy from India, who is actually in sort of business management. And he listed the 10 things about business management that he and career management that he learned from David Bowie. And he actually broke it down song with the periods of David Bowie's life. It was astounding. You have to look it up. It's fantastic. I mean, he talks about, because one of the things about Bowie was that he was so good at changing. He was so good at going to the new thing, almost where it seemed like he couldn't go there. Well, he went there and it worked.
Like his last album was inspired by Kendrick Lamar.
Right.
Which is crazy that he was listening to Kendrick Lamar.
Absolutely.
I met David Bowie.
Really?
I interviewed him early on in my career. I shouldn't have interviewed him. I was just too green. And one of the questions I asked him was, you're always three steps ahead. Who should I be listening to? And he's like, there's a Rabbit in the Moon. I'm like, oh, no, I haven't. At this point in time, I'd never heard of Rabbit in the Moon. I said, no. And he's like, Granddaddy? I said, no.
Granddaddy.
I never heard of Granddaddy.
There you go.
Now, 3 months later, I ended up hearing about Rabbit in the Moon and Granddaddy. So this was at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called the Area 1, Area 2 or Area 1 Festival with Moby and Outkast was on the festival. Later that day, David Bowie comes into catering. I'm like, David Bowie eats backstage catering? He has the tray in his hand, and everyone's just like, oh my gosh, it's David Bowie, it's David Bowie. So I'm not the type of person who thinks that because I interview someone, they're my best friend. So I saw him, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to put my head down and leave, get out of here. So as I walk past David Bowie, he seeks me out. He looks at me, he slaps me in the face, like a grandfather would do, like a loving slap to the face, and he's like, I can't believe you've never heard of Granddad. And then he chuckles to himself.
That's great. But, you know, it's interesting that I think it's easy to forget about how important some of these people were. And one of my great pastimes is going on Google or Wikipedia and just seeing the connections between all these people. Mm-hmm. And you go like, wow, all right, David Bowie was involved in that.
To think that he sung with Bing Crosby and Trent Reznor.
Right, exactly. That's the gamut.
There was a good tweet after David Bowie passed. Someone said, I think I like all the wrong David Bowie songs. But that was a great thing. He had... You could play Let's Dance, and someone from the 80s would be like, yeah, but then you could play this crazy industrial song from the 90s, and be like, who is that? That's David Bowie, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are no wrong David Bowie songs.
And Scott Weiland.
Scott Weiland. I didn't know Scott at all, never met him. I saw him play. I saw Stone Temple Pilots play a bunch of times, and I have to say that you can make whatever claims you want, but that was a great rock band. A great rock band, and he was a great front man. But I have to say that I can't imagine having been in a band with him. You know, having been in bands with some difficult people, a couple times with people with substance abuse problems, it's so hard to be in a band. And when you're dealing with somebody who's that unreliable, I always felt bad, and I feel bad for the other guys, but he was just so great. I mean, that's the problem with people like that. They're so great when they're great, and they're so awful when they're awful.
Yeah. I think of him as one of the last great rock stars. Like, rock star in the sense of...
Yeah.
You know they're crazy. You know they're into themselves, but they're so freaking good you don't care.
He thought of himself as that, too.
Yeah.
I read some quotes somewhere where, you know, he said, I'm a rock star. I'm expected to do X, Y, and Z. You know, I mean... He thought of himself that way.
Because his stage moves, they were just definitive Scott Weiland stage moves.
Absolutely.
Like, kids would go into their bedrooms and try to be like Scott Weiland.
Try to do the dance.
I was trying to think of rock stars after Scott Weiland, and I was having trouble coming up with a list of, like, true rock stars.
True rock stars.
That serious music people would like, and people who like their mainstream music also enjoy.
I don't think you can find one. I think it's very difficult. In fact, even his peers, a lot of them weren't really rock stars. I mean, Billy Corgan wasn't really a rock star.
No, he wasn't, no.
I mean, and I don't really think he thought of himself as being one either. But, you know, but Scott really was the real deal. And it'll be interesting to see if we see people like him in the future. I don't know. It's tough because that takes so much. And the other thing to remember about him was that he wasn't just the guy who gyrates on stage. He could sing like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that guy could do anything vocally, and that makes it a lot easier.
Glenn Frey.
Glenn Frey, yeah, I have a sort of a love-hate thing with the Eagles. You know, I could tell a bunch of stories, not personal stories, but stories of other people. But the best story, really, for everybody is that my mother fell in love with Take It to the Limit. She got divorced, and I don't know, this song seemed to resonate with her. And anytime it came, and it came on a lot.
Anytime it came on,
my mother would crank the thing, and my sister and I'd be screaming inaudibly in the background, just like Edward Munch, you know, the scream, our mouths just contorted. Turn it off! Turn it down! So, kind of drove me a little crazy. I don't think Glenn Frey was the nicest guy in the world, and I don't want to speak ill of the dead. I didn't know him personally, but I kind of got the impression he was another sort of difficult dude, but enormously talented. And again, go back and look at what Glenn Frey did with other artists. It's fascinating to see the backups he did. I mean, obviously the Linda Ronstadt stuff, Randy Newman, Short People, that's him singing in the background. It's interesting the interconnections between these people. The Eagles, you know, they've been described as, you know, Buffalo Springfield light or even Poco light, which is horrible. But let's face it, regardless of what you think about the Eagles, their songs are every bit as much a part of the popular canon of music as anybody's.
Yeah, and there's a nice piece about Glenn Frey written by Cameron Crowe in the latest issue of Rolling Stone.
Oh, okay.
And he describes Glenn Frey as having a pirate smile. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then finally, Lemmy, before we go to break.
Lemmy. I got to say, I don't know whether the Ace of Spades came out in 80 or 81, maybe. And I remember Ian MacKaye gave all the band, like, the single. I think he was sending us a message, frankly. But and I knew about Motorhead before that, but when I put on that single, I couldn't believe it. It was just so, it was insane. It just seemed to defy everything about rock, at the same time embodying everything about rock. And, you know, obviously it goes without saying the guy was just a character. I mean, beyond characters. I would have loved to have known that guy.
I know.
I mean, he just, regardless of what you think of his music, he just, he probably would have been more fun than anybody you can imagine being.
Well, anytime I went to L.A. and I walked past the Rainbow,
oh, yeah,
you always think, there's a chance.
There's a chance.
I mean, there's a really good chance that Lemmy's going to be in there.
That's right. That's right.
I think one of the most underrated things that Lemmy did was write a wrestling theme song. For a popular musician to do that, that has train wreck all over it.
All over it.
So he wrote one for Triple H, who was the world champion on several occasions. It's all about the game and how you play it. And I thought, wow, like, this is a freaking good song.
Yeah.
He also wrote Mom, I'm Coming Home.
That's right.
With Ozzy Osbourne.
Absolutely. No, I mean, he was one of those guys, too. There's a good documentary out about him.
And
And you hear his love for the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
It's really something. But the way he describes the Beatles is fascinating because he said, he contrasts them to the Stones. And he says something, I'm going to just paraphrase, he says something to the fact that, you know, the Beatles were these pipe-hitting guys from Liverpool. The Stones were a bunch of pansies from London. And I just think that's so amazing that he made that differentiation. And, of course, the other thing is, he roadied for Jimi Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, you got that on your resume. That's pretty hard to get to.
When I worked at MTV2, we had Headbangers Ball.
Sure.
And in the studio, you weren't allowed to drink or smoke. And I believe those restrictions were lifted for Lemmy. So he even gets mad respect in the Viacom building. So we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, Lyle and I will talk about the music headlines of the week. All right, we are back. Jim Shear with Lyle Presler. Time for the music happenings of the week. Rick Rubin is teaming up with J.J. Abrams,
Ricky,
Flying Lotus, and select electronic musicians for a Star Wars-themed LP. It comes out on February 19th. You can get the hard copy on March 18th, and the songs will incorporate Star Wars sounds and movie quotes. Let's take a quick listen.
Back in the late 70s? It was one of those Star Wars theme done as a disco song.
See, I'm surprised that Rick Rubin is doing this.
Well, I didn't know.
I didn't know he was a Star Wars fan.
Well, I don't know. But Rick Rubin appears to be a fan of a lot of things.
But he has carved out time in his busy schedule.
Well, how busy is it? I don't know. I guess
it seems
busy.
Like he's producing everyone.
Well, that's true. He's producing everyone. Yeah. Although I have always sort of wondered about, well, that's, you know, I've wondered sometimes about Rick Rubin producing things. I think sometimes it's more like Rick Rubin says, let's do something, and people just do it, and he just stands there and listens to it. No, that's not true. He's actually one of the more, he's definitely one of the more inventive people of the last 20, 25, 30 years, I think.
But
as far as this is concerned, I don't know.
I mean, the movie quotes, though, because it kind of feels like a mixtape that you'd make back in the day, how you would record Star Wars quotes off your TV.
Right. My daughter will like it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to listen to it. Beyoncé has announced her Formation World Tour.
Oh, yeah.
Within,
I think, about 4 seconds of the performance during the halftime. I got, you know, we got a ding.
Because there was the commercial. Yeah.
And then there was a ding on one of my wife's devices. Yeah, saying tickets go on sale.
Yeah, so the tour kicks off April 27th in Miami. It will wrap up July 31st in Belgium. It is a stadium tour. Mm-hmm. So, Lyle, if you and I want to see it, she'll be hitting Citi Field.
Okay.
For in New York City, and she's also playing Heinz Field to all my Pittsburgh folks.
Oh.
Formation, the single, is available to stream and download free through Tidal.
Through Tidal.
Who is backed by Jay-Z.
There
we
you go.
Spoke about Stone Temple Pilots earlier. They are holding open auditions for a new lead singer.
Huh.
Anyone can be the new lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots.
And there'll be a lot of people on.
Yeah, and the guy said that they'll know once the person walks into the door. It's just a feeling kind of thing.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think if you've watched, what was the movie, Rockstar?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That's it.
Now, Chester Bennington was in Stone Temple Pilots for a bit, but he has left because he wants to concentrate on his family in Linkin Park. Rihanna's new album, Anti, will be number one next week on the Billboard 200. Now, in its debut week, it was downloaded 1.47 million times. However, there was a catch. It was given away free to Samsung users and fans with a special Rihanna promo code. RIAA considered it platinum. SoundScan did not.
Well, and wasn't there something about it only sold like 460 copies?
Well, that's because everyone got it for free.
Right, sure. But I mean, 460. I mean, even in the modern world, that's pretty rough.
What's your take on this?
Well, you know, the thing about it is there's a whole long history of how this whole thing is done. And the reason SoundScan came into being was the fact that it was completely fraudulent. The charts were totally fraudulent. What record stores would do is they would have the label reps would visit them and they would just sit there and scan copies through it. Or they would ring copies up and write them down as if they sold them. The whole thing was riddled with complete fraud. And so SoundScan came in a way to actually supposedly track this stuff. So now that we're getting into this, it occurs to me that isn't the principle of this that a record is sold when someone buys it?
Yes.
So if Samsung orders a million copies of something and they pay for them,
okay,
isn't that a sale? I mean, it's
okay.
even if they
just made me see the light, Lyle.
Even if they erase them, okay, even if they never if they never get distributed, they were still bought and sold. Now, it's the same thing. I could go in and buy a box of vinyl at Urban Outfitters and throw it out in the street. I still bought it. And by the way, I would throw a lot of it out in the street.
So, by her giving away free downloads, do you think she should have gotten the number one for debut week?
Yeah, I mean, the caveat is, I don't really understand exactly how they differentiate between downloads, free downloads, physical sales, and whatever. There's a formula that they go through. But if, in fact, and my understanding was that the free part of it was free through Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Samsung bought them to begin with, it doesn't matter what they did. So if they now they took the same attitude about U2.
With the free
the Apple thing,
just
right?
Popped up on your iPhone.
Well, see, I think the difference there is that there was no action. Now I'm getting very legal about this. But there was no definitive steps taken. No football move after the catch taken to actually virtually or physically take it as a consumer. So if it just popped up in your box, that's like.
If you have to lift a finger,
I think if you have to tap something or even use voice commands.
All right, interesting. It works. Now you have some headlines.
Well, I have one, and that is that I understand that. Despite the fact that apparently the Grateful Dead, in whatever form it exists, apparently last summer were the last shows. I thought that's what I heard. But we now have something called The Dead and Company, which is going to be joined by John Mayer in his ever-expanding downward slide into hell. And so I was just thinking about that, and I was thinking about, you know, maybe he should go back and sort of deaden up some of his old music. So, you know, I want to truck through the halls of my high school. You know, you could do that. And, you know, and sort of tying into that is the fact that apparently Katy Perry, who, as you probably all know, was at least at several occasions involved with John Mayer, apparently is involved with none other than Legolas Orlando Bloom. Yes, that's right. And I can make a comment about shooting straight arrows here, but that gets a little high on inside. So yeah, that's interesting. So they're both sort of on the move here in different ways.
Wow. Will you be attending any of those shows?
The Dead shows, no. I'm going to give you the stock sort of punk rock answer to the Grateful Dead, which is I really admire like what they built. It's really impressive when you think about it. That said, I would probably rather be shot in the face than have to spend more than 15 minutes listening to it. In fact, we actually, to tell you, the rule was, you know, when you're a guitar player and you're standing around, you start going doodly doodly, you noodle. And noodling is directly from Jerry Garcia. I mean, that's what it was, noodling. You don't really play anything. You just sort of go loodly, 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 and drive everybody completely insane. But I, you know, that said, again, my PC answer is I really do admire what they've done.
All right. Hey, Belly is getting back together. Are you a fan of Belly?
I was not a fan of Belly, but I certainly know.
I was a college radio DJ, and I appreciated Belly. I wasn't a huge fan.
They were a staple.
Yeah, so they broke up in 1996. They are going to reunite this year and plan on making new music.
Okay.
And then this Monday is the Grammy Awards.
Yes.
And as Lyle said, no Grammys on Sunday because that's Valentine's Day.
I think so. I think that's what it is. Because I think that they figured that a lot of people go out to dinner and would probably miss it.
Now, last year, I think the Grammys were in January. I forget if they got pushed back for the Super Bowl or pushed up for the Super Bowl or some other event.
Yeah, I think
something at the Staples Center.
I think they came before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was in January. Yeah. So they're in February this year on a Monday. I just want to quickly go through some of the major categories. Album of the Year. So if you don't know, Sound and Color. Here are the five nominees. Sound and Color from Alabama Shakes. To Pimp a Butterfly from Kendrick Lamar. Traveler from Chris Stapleton. 1989 from Taylor Swift. And Beauty Behind the Madness from The Weeknd. Mm. Now, there was a span of 3 or 4 years where I nailed this category.
Really?
Last year, I was totally off.
Okay.
Beck, I didn't know Beck was going to win last year.
Oh, that was...
Neither did Kanye.
No, apparently not. Yeah, I mean, I actually have some familiarity with all of them. The most familiarity I have is with 1989 because my daughter's 8, 9 years old.
And we should point out that you attended the 1989 World Tour.
I did. I was one.
And we're a happy customer.
I was one of four men, you know, and one of the guys actually had a shirt on that said "Dads Love Taylor," which was creepy. But I have to say that I went to the Meadowlands to see Taylor Swift with my daughter and my wife, and we had a lovely time. I thought, listen, a stadium show is a stadium show. She knows how to do it, and it worked. It certainly worked.
Do you still have your bracelet?
I don't. But that was a cool feature. I'd never seen that before. I'm sure other people have. But you know, you get this bracelet when you go in. It's kind of like a trans. It's like an opaque white, and then at certain points, queued up, obviously computerized, it flashes different colored lights in different sequences. But it's all in unison. So you look up, and the entire stadium's like all going blue or going red, blue, and it was cool. I mean, it was a way to sort of bring everybody involved in it without having to resort to, you know, hokiness. It worked. It actually worked. I thought it was good.
Now, do you think, what's your favorite out of these albums? And then what do you think will win?
Well, I would say that if I had a favorite, it would probably be between Beauty and Behind the Madness and To Pimp a Butterfly.
Okay.
But I think that, again, you talked about Beck. I don't know. I mean, the problem with The Weeknd is that it's pretty adult stuff. I mean, it's pretty dark stuff. And even though the songs you hear on the radio are cleaned up a little bit and whatever, if you really get into the lyrics, and I'm a lyric guy, so I start looking at the lyrics and I'm like, whoa, what are we talking about here? I think To Pimp a Butterfly is a really interesting record. I think Kendrick stands out for lots of reasons, but it's a great record. I just don't know. here's the thing about the, as you know, the Grammys is, the pool of people who vote for the Grammys is huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I could vote for the Grammys if I wanted to.
Have you ever voted on the Grammys?
No, because here's the deal. You have to have a certain number of credits, and I have enough credits as a producer and a musician, and you can therefore become a Grammy voter, but you got to pay money for it. You have to pay a yearly fee. And I'm sorry, but I just don't take this stuff seriously enough to pay money for it. I mean, I got to tell you. I mean, just to backtrack for a second. I mean, this is one of those things that I just can't stand about us. We're all so obsessed with what's the best in art. Art doesn't have a best. I mean, this isn't batting averages, okay? Think of these records that you just named. These are apples and oranges just thrown into a giant vat. And I think that it's very difficult. I mean, you know, would the person who listens to Chris Stapleton's record listen to Pimp a Butterfly? I don't know. Maybe. If they did, would they honestly be able to sit down and tell you which one's better? I mean, it's kind of crazy.
So knowing the voters, who do you think they'll vote as the album of the year?
I think they'll vote for 1989.
1989?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow, okay.
I think so, because I think one of the things that happens, and I've heard wonderful stories about the Grammys over the years, but one of the things that happens is people vote. So many people vote, and they fill the things out in like 5 seconds. So they just go through, and they see the thing that they recognize the most, and unless they hate it. Mm-hmm. And if they hate it, then sometimes they just pick something they've never heard.
Well, with the voting process, everybody gets to vote on the major categories.
Right.
And then if you lean more towards country, then you can only vote on a certain amount of country awards. If you lean more rock, right, vice versa. Right. So because everybody can vote on album of the year, I think Chris Stapleton might have a chance.
Yeah,
well, he has all the country voters.
Yeah, and you also have to remember something about voting on multiple categories, whether it be elections, it can be anything. Votes get split. I mean, sometimes what happens is a lot of people vote for this person, a lot of people vote for that person. They cancel out, and somebody else sneaks through. Beck could have won by 2 votes. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The results are never released.
But I think it has to be To Pimp a Butterfly, because if you read all of the best of year-end lists, Pimp a Butterfly was number one on everyone's list.
Well, that's
and I
true.
Would think a lot of those people are voters, so I would think the Critics' Choice would be To Pimp a Butterfly.
Oh, I think the Critics' Choice would definitely be
Kendrick
that.
Lamar.
Yes, absolutely.
So
yeah.
I think it'll win, but I don't. I think Chris Stapleton is a dark horse, and 1989 is the people's choice.
The people's choice.
Yeah. And if Alabama Shakes won, no diss to Alabama Shakes. Are you kidding me?
Well, that would be, again, that could be the result of vote splitting.
The vote splitting.
If vote splitting happens, if you get enough, if you get the country people going for Chris, and you get a lot of critic type people who listen to critics, people who are critics going for Kendrick, you get, you know, a certain number of people who are just like The Weeknd, they've been hearing it on the radio.
Yeah, my favorite is The Weeknd, yeah, but I don't think it's a tight album.
Right.
So if you're, I don't know how many people vote on albums being cohesive.
I don't think they do that. I think you're giving people way too much credit for that, man. In fact, you know, you can ask people like, they say, oh, I love this album. You know, name 4 songs, and they can't. I mean, it's seriously, that's bad. In fact, I defy people name 4 songs off of a classic record.
Wow.
You know, so so I don't, but again, vote splitting can result in surprises. So Alabama Shakes.
Let's go Song of the Year. Blank Space from your girl Taylor Swift. All Right from Kendrick Lamar. Girl Crush from Little Big Town. See You Again from Wiz Khalifa featuring Charlie Puth. That would be one of my worst songs of the year. And Thinking Out Loud from Ed Sheeran. What is the song that defined 2015?
Well, again, I'm a victim of way too much pop radio.
If you talk about a ubiquitous song, it's a Blank Space.
It's Blank Space. We're Thinking Out Loud.
Ooh, yeah. I think Blank Space was bigger. I mean,
Blank Space was definitely bigger.
Huge.
Yeah, huge, huge song. I mean, you couldn't get away from it. I probably listened to that more than I've listened to Black Flag, to be honest with you. But I would really be disappointed if See You Again won. Because I
would be outraged.
I just think that the problem with that song is that it's just so pro forma. It's like, okay, we're going to have the guy playing the piano, singing sensitively, and then Wiz is going to come in. And I've got nothing against these guys, and I like Wiz. I think it's fine. But then he just comes in and does this thing, and it's just sort of cycles through that until it's over, and you're just left going, okay, all right.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's like this song was made specifically for a soundtrack.
And Girl Crush, you know, it had a lot of publicity behind it. It had a lot of, like, controversy behind it. But I don't know how much it really sticks in people's minds. I think it's more like the thing about it sticks in people's minds, but I don't know what the song really does.
And then performance-wise, who are you excited to see? And I can go down the list. There's Adele, Taylor Swift, Kendrick Lamar, The Weeknd, Nicki Minaj, Selena Gomez, Ariana Grande, Little Big Town, a tribute to Lionel Richie, who is still alive, by the way.
I thought that was strange. Yes.
Pitbull, Robin Thicke, and Travis Barker, Justin Bieber, Diplo, and Skrillex, Carrie Underwood, and Sam Hunt, Ellie Goulding, and Andra Day, Tori Kelly, and James Bay, the cast of Hamilton. Gets a little nod at the Grammys. Lady Gaga will be doing the David Bowie tribute. The Hollywood Vampires will be doing the Lemmy tribute. And the Hollywood Vampires consists of the supergroup Alice Cooper, Johnny Depp, and Joe Perry. Chris Stapleton, Gary Clark Jr., and Bonnie Raitt will be doing the B.B. King tribute. And Rihanna will also be performing. And I'm sure...
What about you? What do you think? What are you excited for?
I like Adele.
Yeah.
And I think she'll put on a no-frills performance, but her voice will be strong.
Of course.
Out of curiosity, the Hollywood Vampires.
Yep.
I haven't seen them live. Out of curiosity, the David Bowie tribute with Lady Gaga. What did she do? Did she do a tribute last year to The Sound of Music?
Was that her?
I don't know if that was at the Grammys or the Academy Awards, but I like it when she plays it straight, but I kind of want her to be crazy. For the David Bowie tribute.
She'll be crazy for the David Bowie.
Yeah. She needs to be.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because there is no Lady Gaga without David Bowie.
No, and you can't do that straight. If you do it straight, then it just seems silly.
I don't want it to be straight.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. That should be just way out there. So that will be interesting. I like Pitbull. I do. I like Pitbull. I just, I like things that have a weird incongruity to them. And he just looks incongruous. I mean, I just can't, like, he's just sort of like, he's always out there doing these sort of weird moves. He looks strange, and he looks like, you know, a weird uncle. And I just think it's always fun. I think it's fun. But that's a lot of stuff that they're going to do. And I think, one of the complaints about the Grammys has always been not enough performances. All these award shows, not enough performances. Well, I mean, in the past,
yeah. Because I was going to say, the Grammys are packed with performances now.
Oh, I know. This is really great, because I think that's what people want to see. I don't think that people want to see somebody standing up there going, and the Grammy goes to.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's fun. And that's why the Country Music Awards were always so good, because that's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I would watch that even though I wasn't terribly interested in it, because I just wanted to know, like, who are these people and what do they do? Because you'd hear the names, you never really heard the music that much.
So Grammys happening this Monday night, and LL Cool J will host for what feels like the 20th year in a row. I think maybe it's only the fourth or fifth year in a row.
It feels like forever.
But he has the, what is it, the, not the CSI, the...
NCIS?
CBS, yeah. So he has a CBS show. He's an artist, so I guess it makes sense. And he kind of stays out of the way.
Yeah. I do remember years and years ago seeing him do Mama's Gonna Knock You Out at the Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I like LL Cool J, but I don't think he should be hosting the Grammys for a fourth or fifth consecutive year.
Probably not. It's probably time to get somebody else. But, you know, when you're in the CBS family, you know, that's part of the whole deal.
And he's hosting the lip sync battle.
Oh, yeah.
He has so many jobs, I have none.
Yeah.
So if he could just throw me one of his side gigs.
Isn't that funny how nowadays people have like 14 different jobs? I mean, like, Boomer Esiason, you know, he's CBS too. The guy is on like every single, it's all day long. All day. Boomer Esiason, all day. Listen, if you can do it, it's great.
Yeah, my mom said to me, well, why can't Carson Daly just give you one of his jobs? I said, Mom, that would be nice. I could pay the bills if Carson just gave me one of his side gigs.
Or if, you know, Ryan Seacrest just gave me one of his companies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just give me one of your companies.
There you go.
I'll be fine.
So when we come back, Lyle and I will have our music picks of the week. So don't you go anywhere.
Game on!
Game on!
Tired, hearing about what a great party team this is.
Your turn.
All right, we are back, and it is now time for my musical pick of the week, followed by yours.
Okay.
So here goes. Same Old Love by Selena Gomez. This has been burning a hole in my iPod for the last 3 weeks. I'm not embarrassed that I like the song, but I'm embarrassed that I'm not embarrassed that I like the song.
What exactly does that mean?
I shouldn't like it, but I can't resist.
Oh, you know, that's the power of pop, man. And that's the thing. It's like people expect me, because of my musical background, to be, you know, oh, yeah, pop music. Pop music is pop music because it's pop music.
Yes.
Because it gets in your head, because it stays in your head. And when it's well done, it's as well done as anything has ever been done. I mean, now, doesn't mean there's not a lot of garbage, but ask me how many garbage punk rock bands opened for us on a tour. We used to keep lists of them.
You did.
And I don't want to offend anybody, but there were a lot of them had Reagan in the name. Okay? So, and that I would exclude a couple of Reagan bands. But for the most part, you know, pop music does its magic because if it's well done, it hits all your centers, all your little pleasure centers, all your little things. And as much as you fight it, you'll sit there, you'll sing it.
Now, I'm a fan of pop music, but I never wanted to like Selena Gomez because she came up through the kiddie circuit. She went out with Justin Bieber. Right. And when she said, hey, I'm putting out another album, I'm like, no. Love the first single. And then this one was released this year. And I thought, dang, it's good. And then I found out that it was co-written by Charlie XCX,
right?
Who I like.
And she's great.
Yeah.
She's really great. I saw her down at Asbury Park, and she was fantastic. I just thought she was wonderful.
So shall we play it? All right.
Take away your things and go. You can't take back what you said. I know I've heard it all before at least a million times. I'm not one to forget. You know.
Same Old Love, Selena Gomez.
I think it's a great
song. It's that piano loop. That's great.
Yeah.
And I like that she swears.
Yep. I like that she swears. I think I really like the song. Obviously, one of the things that everyone should know about pop music today is it's written by three people. There's three people out there in the world who write everything, which is why a lot of it starts to sound the same. Now, this has always been true, by the way. This is nothing. Everyone says, oh, you know, this is awful because Max Martin writes everything or so-and-so writes everything. Well, it was always that way. I mean, it's always been that.
Yeah.
Carole King wrote most of the songs that you like from the early 70s.
Was it the Brill Building? Yeah, the Brill Building.
Downtown, up in Midtown New York, where they would grind this stuff out. And it doesn't mean it's bad. Just because you grind it out doesn't mean it's bad. So the same thing holds true here. The only thing about this song that annoys me is when they go, that little trick that they do, which
right.
everyone does. You
right.
know? That bothers me. I don't think that needs to be there. I think you could have left that out.
They could have just ended it.
Yeah, they could have ended
it. Now, I love this song because it's not an encore type song.
Mm-hmm.
You bust this out in the middle of the set.
Yeah,
and
that's
I love
true.
Strong middle of the set songs.
I think you're right.
Now, when we listened to that song, did you feel weird at all listening to a song with me?
No, just, not at all.
Because I told you while we were listening to that song, one of the most uncomfortable moments in life is when a band plays me their song right then and right there, and they're expecting some type of reaction from me.
Oh, yeah. And they're going to read everything. They're going to read everything you do.
And then because you want to break the awkwardness, you kind of nod your head and be like, yeah, man.
You start bopping along.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Yeah. Or and the worst thing is when they actually want to sort of act it out or lip sync it to you.
Yeah.
That's when it really gets bad. It's like, I can hear it.
Why can't they just send you an MP3 and say, listen to it tonight and send me an email of what you think?
Somebody at a record company thought this was a good idea. You know, they let's cater the food in.
Oh,
you know?
That's the worst.
And then you're
the group listening session.
You're eating while you're listening to it. It's like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. You know, do I bite into that gooey bagel with cream cheese now? Is it the right moment? Is the bridge coming? Can I get through it in the bridge? It's so bad.
Because a lot of times you have to hear a song 10 different times before you finally get it.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I can't imagine what that kind of feedback helps you with. I mean, I could sit there and pretend I like your song and throw it in the garbage as soon as you leave. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I think that that's a dynamic of, you know, that they created it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's them.
Yeah.
If you play me a song, it's like, okay, Jim likes the song. So, but yeah, so I don't have a problem when you play me a song. I hope you won't have a problem.
I'm curious about this. Lyle, what is your music pick of the week?
My music pick of the week is DNCE, Cake by the Ocean.
Shall we listen?
We shall.
Shall we proceed?
With the masterpiece, to waste time with the masterpiece. You should be rolling with me, you should be rolling with me. You're a real life fantasy, you're a real life fantasy. But you're moving so carefully, let's start living dangerously. Talk to me, baby.
Thing.
I love it.
Joe Jonas.
DNCE.
Right. I'm not, but what I see, I'm a, like I said before, I'm a lyric guy, and I love these lyrics because Cake by the Ocean. Now, they explain it. Now, you always got to be wary of explanations on things like this. But their claim is they were working with some Swedish producers, and the Swedish producers couldn't understand the American expression sex on the beach. So they kept referring to it as Cake by the Ocean. So finally they said, hey, that's what we'll call it then.
Wow.
Now, I don't know. You never know whether that's
right.
True or not. But to me, I like when things happen that way. If in fact that is kismet, that it happened that way,
mm-hmm.
I think that's great. Because I think that also defies the whole prefab nature of a lot of pop music, which is that it's just basically, you know, what you should know is like a lot of artists go song shopping. Like, so-and-so had a bad breakup. Now they go to the producers and the writers and they go, do you have a bad breakup song?
Mm-hmm.
Which might sound like it's about my ex-boyfriend. And then they modify. And then someone says, this must be about Ed Sheeran. Well, yeah, maybe. But it also might have been written about the writer's girlfriend or boyfriend.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So that's not necessarily the case. I like it for that. I like it because it's very spare. Like, it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
I like the yeah, yeah, yeah. I like the nonsense of it.
There's also swearing in this one.
There's swearing in this
one. So we both picked pop songs. There was a curse word in both of them.
There was a curse. That's interesting.
Now, the one where he sort of did the spoken word curse, I thought that was a little too much.
A little too much at the end.
But
there.
When he sung it,
yeah.
I'm down.
And, of course, if you listen to it on most radio stations, they're taking that out. So
and I like that it's called, like you said, Cake on the Ocean. It's not... I want to hold your hand, kiss me. It's a pop song that's a little bit out of the box.
Yeah, I think that's what's fun about it. And like again, like all good pop music, it just gets in your head and it just doesn't leave until the next one comes along.
Yeah, when you said Joe Jonas, I doubted you. And
right, because we're also used to Nick Jonas.
Yeah,
you know, who's doing sort of the blue-eyed soul kind of thing, the R&B thing. And I can understand that Joe kind of wanted to go in a different direction, maybe. Who knows if this is a direction or not? I mean. You know, again, so much of this stuff is sort of manufactured from day to day, so you don't know what it means.
Wow, good job. Yeah, I enjoyed that. So when we come back, we are going to play Ask Lyle.
Tell us what that award is.
Well, it's the Order of Arts and Letters, and I'm not sure if that's a Knight of the Order of the Arts and Letters or a Commander, because they sent me both. Which was thrilling.
You know what? You didn't have to go and get it in a formal ceremony?
The thing is, with awards, they expect you to turn up for them. And I don't go because I don't want to have to do that to get an award.
Right.
Because they say, well, look, you come here and we'll give you this award for being a great person. And if you don't want to come, we're going to give it to somebody else. And so I said, well, that's fair enough then. Give it to somebody else because I only want one that you really mean.
Right.
Anyway, I told the French that I couldn't come over for the award thing, and they put it in an envelope and sent it to my house.
That's the coolest
Which
thing I've
I
ever heard.
That was the hippest kind of thing I'd ever... I said, it's the only one I ever wear, because I thought, I got this by envelope.
Yeah. You were just going through your, like, mail, like, exactly. Gas bill, electric bill, high order of letter of arts.
All righty, we are back. It's time to Ask Lyle. We should have a hashtag, Ask Lyle, and people could tweet me questions they have for you.
That sounds good.
Because you're not on Twitter.
That's right. I'm not on Twitter.
Will you ever get on Twitter?
I don't know.
What if this show explodes? And then there's suits involved, and they said, Lyle, listen, you need to get on Twitter.
Then I'll do what everyone else does. I'll hire a Twitter person. A tweeter.
And then you'll buy followers?
But I don't know, but I won't need to buy followers, but I will have them wear a special uniform. That'd be a special tweeter uniform.
When is the last time that you listened to a Minor Threat song under your own volition?
20 years ago.
Whoa. So I'm a lot more recent than you.
Probably.
Okay. 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember the occasion?
No, I think someone actually played it for me. Oh, you mean under my...
Own volition.
Oh, God, no. Because at this point, I don't even... When they come up with something new, like some remaster or something, I don't even bother to listen
to it. But you don't ever want to listen to it? Think about the glory days?
No.
No?
No, 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 no.
Okay.
I mean, it's fine if it comes on the radio or something, you know, like if it's on...
Because I've been in bands.
Sirius XM Faction. Come on, play it. Come on, that other stuff is garbage. Play it. Play it. You know, a lot of people won't even play our songs because we were too, like, nice. You know, no, there's a big schism in punk rock, like between like the really nasty bands and then the guys who didn't take drugs bands.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people, believe it or not,
that's a shame.
There's a lot of people who won't do it. They think it's too something.
See, because I've been in a bunch of bands, and every 3 or 4 years, I'll think, let me just listen to the album.
Well, you know,
see what we were thinking back then, back then.
I heard it too much.
Okay.
And you got to remember, we only had like what 27 songs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Okay. Can you define the word ephemera?
Ephemera. Yeah. Ephemera is, stuff that is ancillary to the actual thing, or little bits and bobs, flotsam and jetsam. I'm not really defining anything.
The reason I brought it up is because you once sent me an email and you said you had a cornucopia of acquired ephemera.
Ah.
And that was the first time I ever read the word ephemera, and I thought, wow.
Yeah, it's sort of stuff that's sort of in orbit around the main thing. So, like, for instance, if you were in a band, you might have a bunch of old flyers and a bunch of guitar picks and a bunch of posters and marketing things, and that's ephemera.
And my last question is the best piece of swag that you have in this house.
I would say it was a snow globe for Laika, the band Laika. And it's actually shows like the dog Laika on the moon with like a rocket, and it's a little snow globe. And I don't know whether we made them or not. I can't imagine why, because it doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything. But you know, Laika was the dog. Laika was the Russian space dog, who bravely went up into space in the early days, and unfortunately, there was no way to bring her back. So she's still up there.
Now, how many years ago was this?
The 50s.
So,
I mean, look,
there's a chance she's probably not still up there.
Well, no, probably she came down to Earth as space junk at some point, burned up in the atmosphere. But I thought it's always fun the idea that there was this dog and they actually fed her treats apparently as she was, and they left enough food for her to and water for her to live for even beyond the period of where they were in touch with her. So I think they were trying to be nice, which wasn't really the Soviet way, but they were trying
now,
to be
where
nice.
Is this piece of swag?
It's upstairs on my desk.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you-
yeah, it's in my office. The problem is that the water has gradually evaporated somehow, and it doesn't appear to, there's a plug, but the thing has become so, it's plastic, it's become so brittle that I'm afraid that if you even tried to like
right.
open it, it would just disintegrate.
All right.
But that's my favorite piece.
There you go. Once again, if you would like to ask Lyle something, hashtag.
Please, no more vocabulary words. I am quite certain that I did not nail any definitions there.
And then will you be watching the Grammys on Monday night?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it. And please, people, do not expect too much out of these things. It is a real danger to expect too much out of these things. Just take it for what it is.
Yeah. Just
music's biggest night.
Music, yeah. I guess music needs a measuring stick, and that is what the Grammys is.
That's what the Grammys is, and it's also a way to sell stuff, sell advertising, sell records. That's what it does.
For Lyle Presler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same good night.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.